Hello, 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 ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Welcome to VUX World with me, Kane Sims. Let's turn that music off. It's a bit distracting. Welcome to VUX World. We've got an epic episode lined up today. I'm joined by Somnath Biswas of Total Jobs Group and Stepstone, and we're going to be talking about how to use AI to improve the job search experience. We've all been in that situation before where we have to go and look for a job, or we want to go and look for a job. Can be highly stressful. There's a lot of emotions going on. It's a very big decision, because whatever you do in your next career venture is definitely going to change your life, because you're going to be working with different people, possibly going to different locations, and everything changes. And so it is a very highly emotive, highly sensitive area. And if you're going to implement any kind of automation and AI in those spaces, then you better do it well. You better get the use case right. You better get the technology right. You better get the design right. So Somnath is going to be speaking to us all about the Stepstone journey and the Total Jobs journey, and how you can do that, how you can implement AI in the job search use case and get it right. And so, excited to bring Som on in just one moment. But before I do that, definitely need to tell you about Unparsed. If you don't know already, you should definitely know by now. Unparsed is coming up this June. It is the practitioner AI conference of the season. In June 17th to 19th, we're going to be in London, descending on London, with around about 400 AI practitioners, all there to share best practice, tricks of the trade, learnings, emerging best practice, as we start experimenting more with things like large language models and generative AI, to create conversational experiences that actually matter, that make a difference to people's lives, that make a difference to business outcomes. And so we're going to be sharing all that kind of stuff. There's a design track, there's a developer track. And so regardless of where you sit, whether you're on the creative side, whether you're on the technical side, whether you're on the product management side, it doesn't really matter. It's going to be absolutely epic. And you're going to find all kinds of lessons, all kinds of people who you're going to be at network with. And it's going to be absolutely amazing. So the early bird offer on the tickets is actually going to stop, I believe it'll be either the end of this week or next week. I think it's the end of next week. And so you've got like a week left to get in on your early birds. The price will be going up incrementally beyond then. And we've got a lot more speakers just being published on the website. We've got speakers from Amazon, Microsoft, Lloyds Banking Group. We've got Admiral. We've got Booking.com. We've got Hugging Face, Samsung, you name it. There's some absolutely epic brands going to be sharing with you the tricks of the trade and what they're doing and the outcomes that they've been achieving. And so go to unparsed.com. If you are interested in being part of the AI revolution, boys and girls. And secondly, tomorrow, if you're listening to this live on LinkedIn, or if you're listening to this before Thursday the 4th, or on Thursday the 4th, we are doing a webinar with Zoom on Thursday the 4th of April. Even if you're listening to this afterwards, you can go back, sign up and get the replay. Zoom has a large language model, and it uses a federated AI approach. And what that means is that they use multiple models behind the scenes to do things like meeting transcriptions and next best actions. And for meeting transcriptions, Zoom's federated AI model performs 20% better on meeting summaries than GPT-4, and 60% better at next steps than GPT-4. And interestingly, Zoom applies that same model to its call center product and to its Zoom virtual agents platform. And so the same AI that is incredibly good, better than GPT-4, at doing things like next best actions, if you think about an agent assist scenario, or at genuinely understanding what people are asking, if you think about the automated conversation scenario, that same model you can use in your customer experience. And so I'll be joined by Laura Ball and James Adamchuk tomorrow, and we'll be covering off what Zoom's approach is and how you can benefit from some pretty powerful technology in the Zoom platform. So don't forget to sign up for that if you are interested. Anyway, on with today's show. I am absolutely delighted, as I mentioned, to be joined by Somnath Biswas. Somnath is the head of product for conversations at Total Jobs Group. We go back a little while, Som. Thank you for joining me. Appreciate it.
Likewise. Happy to be here. A pleasure being here.
Yeah, so
finally happened.
I know. It did finally happen. It's been on the cards for as long as I can even remember. We've been speaking for how long? 2 years?
2 years, probably close to 2 years. We've been at common events for a while, but yeah, we've been planning this for a while. So it's great to be here.
Yeah, likewise. I'm excited to hear what you've been up to. I know a little bit what you've been up to, but I don't know some of the details that hopefully we can get into during the course of this conversation. So yeah, thanks for joining me. So maybe it'd be useful, Som, to share with everybody a little bit about yourself. I know you've been definitely working in products for a long time. You've got a lot of experience. You're likes of NatWest and Amazon and et cetera, so maybe just give us a little bit of a snapshot of yourself and your experience, and interestingly, what got you interested in AI in the first place?
Sure, no, happy to. I've actually now been kind of building software products for close to two decades now. You mentioned some of the firms. So prior to, I'm obviously currently with Total Jobs Group, which is part of the StepStone Group. Prior to that, with Amazon, with a firm called IQVIA Clinical Research. Then prior to that, NatWest. Prior to that, I was with a couple of IT consultancy firms. But I think what kind of I landed up with AI and conversational AI more as a need rather than something that I kind of wanted to kind of actively get into. So the story is, in 2016, I founded my own startup, and the startup was by and large to look at providing enterprise services on platforms like Facebook, Twitter, and others. The idea being, why kind of get someone to come to your site and provide the enterprise service over there, which is obviously costly because there's ad dollars. Why not kind of go to where people naturally spend their time, which is Facebook and Twitter, et cetera, and make your services available over there? We started off with one version of the service where we used to have something like smart stickers. But long story short, around that time, Facebook opened up its platform to chatbots. Chatbots had existed for a while. Telegram, anyways, was kind of there for a while. But when Facebook opened up, chatbots kind of became the very natural choice, because there's a lot of automation, there's a lot of features in terms of carousel cards, etc., that came with that. So long story short, that's when I kind of got involved in conversational AI. So and then the more I kind of got involved in it, it just made sense, because what better way to kind of interact with the user than to have them just speak their mind? And now when I say speak their minds, with now voice coming up, it's literally speak. But previously, around 8-10 years back, it was largely people to kind of typing out their text. But in natural language, you don't have to kind of pre-train anyone. You don't have to say, this is the button you click and this is what you do. Just speak your mind. And then the rest of it is kind of the heavy lifting for the product. So yeah, that my involvement in conversational AI is probably now kind of been now 10 years. I've been kind of building various ML products in the organizations that I mentioned, and prior to that, IT consultancy. And now I don't know. I mean, the field is expanding so rapidly. I don't even know whether, it's conversational AI itself is a very nebulous term now. It's you have generative AI, you have conversational AI, and then you have voice, and it's become multimodal. So the field is important. But yeah,
it has, and It's interesting, because I see it all as conversational AI, basically. Like, anything that uses natural language to facilitate a dialogue between a machine and a person, and to have that person be understood and something happen off the back of it. That could be a conversation, as in a response goes back to the user, or it could be an action that's taken, like in the case of Alexa, you ask it to turn on your heating, it just turns on the heating. It's not a conversation, but it's a conversational interface. Yeah. And so I kind of see it all as being, all this technology has the application to be applied in a conversational AI kind of setting, but it seems to me as though things have splintered a little bit. And you might have noticed this as well, based on your experience. If you started building bots when Facebook Messenger was the thing, that must have been 2014 or 2016. Yeah. And so that was very much tying into the same sort of time as Amazon Alexa was released, at least in the UK. And so you had like two groups of people emerging, which was the people that were interested in Facebook messaging were emerging, and then the people that were interested in Alexa and voice assistants were emerging, and then the Facebook people maybe gravitated towards chatbots, the Alexa people eventually gravitated towards chatbots, and then all the people who were interested in chatbots, that's now become kind of like generative AI, but then you have a whole new load of people who are just interested in generative AI, and so there's another kind of community almost building up, but it's all the same thing, it's just that people call it something differently, and therefore organize themselves into groups based on what they call it, which is strange.
Yeah, true. It is. You're absolutely right. I think, the Alexa wave with its skills, etc., kind of had a very strong start, but probably somehow maybe did not pick up. But then now what you see, or what what OpenAI is now trying to do with the custom GPTs is kind of similar to the Alexa set of skills. So it's all the same thing, but it's in terms of, you know, how you're kind of what you're starting off with and which camp do you kind of you started off with. But you're right. I would kind of just, you know, plus one what you said in my mind as well. Conversational interface or conversational UI is anything where you're using natural language, whether it's you're typing it out or whether you're speaking it out. But the reason why I kind of said, you know, the slight distinction between conversational AI and generative AI is tomorrow I could just convey or I could just communicate, because it's a multimodal experience, I could just convey it based on my gestures. I could just nod. I could just nod positive or negative or whatever it is. I could use sign language. I could use whatever it is. And maybe that then kind of expands the definition of having a conversation. Because when you and I speak, even if I nod, I'm still having a conversation. So it goes beyond the spoken language or the written language, but again, kind of gazing too much into the future.
Yeah, no, I don't necessarily think so. I think even ChatGPT now, for example, you could give it an Excel spreadsheet and ask it to perform a task. And so the thing that it's doing isn't necessarily conversational AI, but at the same time, if you were to use a chatbot on Total Jobs website to apply for a job, that's not necessarily conversational AI from the point of view of you can apply for a job using the web form, you can apply for a job by calling perhaps, you can apply for a job in lots of different ways. The APIs that you're using to enact that application isn't conversational AI, but you're tying into that conversational interface, you know, to make things easier to use for people predominantly.
You're absolutely right. I think the underlying engineering or the underlying the plumbing and, you know, the access to the APIs kind of remains the same. What conversational AI does is it just makes it that much easier for the user to trigger off the actions. Previously, you needed to know that, okay, I have to go to this screen and click this button, and then something would happen, and there was some amount of user education needed over here. Now you basically just clearly just say, hey, I need this thing done. And then rest of the heavy lifting in terms of understanding the intent and which API or which agent or which LLM tool to call in the back end, happens. So there's almost like you have your traditional API layer, then you almost have an additional layer sitting on top of it, which is kind of doing the interpretation, still calling those APIs. And then above that layer is where you have the UI interface, which is now, it was previously chat, now voice, then multimodal. So the UI is changing, the user interface is changing, the interpretation layer, which is where kind of the LLMs and the others would sit, is now becoming richer, but you still have the same traditional services still being exposed through APIs. They're just being called differently now.
That's a good way of explaining it. Definitely wicked. So tell us then a little bit about the role at Total Jobs Group and where the kind of need for AI emerged there. Let's start there.
Sure. If you look at StepStone, we've been working, obviously, like any other organization, we've been working with AI and ML for years now in terms of recommendation systems and other things. And it was around a few years back that we kind of made an acquisition as well in terms of a startup, which was focused entirely on conversational interface. But by and large, I think what kind of got us really thinking about it was around 2 years back, where, I mean, when you were kind of introducing me, you kind of, I think, hit it on the you know, the head with the point that job search is largely very driven by emotion, because more often than not, I mean, you're going to apply for 10, 20, and more often than not, out of those 20, 19 will end up in a rejection. You only get one job. So there's a lot of emotion involved. There's a lot at stake, as you said, rightly said. It's a life-changing event. You find the right job, or you lose the job, and then you find the job. It impacts your life deeply. So that's why there's a lot of emotion involved in that. And so that kind of got us thinking that if our goal in StepStone is ultimately to become a job search companion, it's not a job board. We want to be your companion, help you with your job search. And that obviously has a lot of emotion involved. And so that's what we started off with in terms of, if we want to bring in the emotion and we want to acknowledge the emotion, a screen might not lend itself that much to it. Maybe conversations do. So that's why in going way back in 2022, we kind of started off with, why not start with a conversation? Why not see if people want to do a job search of a conversation? And we initially did not, I mean, although I kind of came with the conversational AI background, the first few months, we did not go down the AI route, because ultimately, I mean, let's face it, AI is nothing but a means to an end. It's a technology. What we are here is to build a product for the user. So we started off with a human-to-human chat. That was the quickest way for us to start off with the conversation to see whether people want to do a job search over a chat. So we quickly kind of put down a human-to-human chat. We trained our colleagues from customer service for that. We kind of obviously got a positive nod from the users. We saw a number of users coming to the chat, asking for job search. Our metrics are North Stars, and these North Stars have stayed with us even today. We kind of started off with two key North Stars. One was CSAT, customer satisfaction. Do people feel that they've had a good experience over the chat? And the second one was, have we been able to kind of move the needle in terms of the customer lifetime value? So customer lifetime value kind of obviously gives us a sense of value to the company, and CSAT was the proxy for value to the customer. So these were the two North Stars that we were tracking. And with the human-to-human chat, we saw the needle go up significantly for the lifetime value and for the CSAT. Although for CSAT, we did not have a benchmark, but we definitely had a benchmark for the lifetime value. So that was a positive thing, saying, okay, people want to kind of chat with us on in terms of job search. I think if you look at the pie, it was like 2/3 of the people wanted to do a new job search. Some wanted updates in terms of their applications, and then a few wanted kind of information around immigration and other things. But nevertheless, that was a first foray. So the first experiment was, if emotions are basically a large part of it, does conversation allow for a job search? And we kind of almost validated that through the human-to-human chat.
Mm.
The next step then was...
just before we get onto the next step, that is a brilliant way of starting to validate that a conversation is the right use, yeah. Right application for the right use case kind of thing. I'm curious around how you kind of measure lifetime value, because your customers... or your users, rather. Your customers and your users are two different people, aren't they? Your customers, yes. Presumably, yes. Are the ones who are paying to advertise, whereas your, yes. Users are the ones who are getting the job. So are you measuring lifetime value from the users or from the people or companies who advertise with you?
Should have clarified it, but it's a brilliant point. You're absolutely right. Our customers are actually the enterprises who are looking for talent. Our users are the people, are the candidates. And in this case, when I talk about the customer lifetime value, or in this case, the user lifetime value, it is basically for the user. So it's basically for the candidate. And obviously for us, the value comes from the number of applications that they make. And we are obviously kind of looking at value applications as well. But yeah, in terms of measuring the lifetime value, it would be the number of applications that that a candidate is able to make.
Right, that makes sense. And therefore, you can then say that if a certain intervention has an increase in applications, you've done a better job at helping people find the right applications, and therefore, yeah. You can also then use that to go to your customers and say, hey, we can now match more people with those jobs, and therefore you should either advertise more with us, or we can charge you more, or we've got different products to get you in front of different candidates, or whatever it might be.
Exactly. And I think the reason why a conversation also works is because it's easier to get more information over a conversation. I mean, you can ask someone to kind of fill up a form of, 10 data points, and you might have some drop-offs. This goes back way to, maybe I'll share a data point. So this is when I was doing my startup, one of my use cases was around lead generation. And I think there was a stat that for a form, the completion ratio is around 1.3%. But when we kind of had a chatbot interact with the user, we actually had a conversion ratio of 16%.
Wow.
Because what happens is you're not putting the entire cognitive load on the user saying, hey, fill up this form. It's like you're feeding the user, and because you keep asking the question, the user tends to feel more engaged, and you actually get better data. But the long story short, it's a conversation is probably the best way to kind of get data from a user. And obviously, the better data you have, the better is the match, the better is the options that you present. And so it's basically not just about the applications numbers, but it's also the quality of the applications, which is ultimately where, I mean, enterprises obviously care about both things. So yeah, but you're right. I mean, that's how we kind of we kind of go into our LTV and the value to the company, and then ultimately the value to the enterprise.
Yeah. And then so the first hypothesis, I suppose, is will a conversational format be a benefit for applicants or potential applicants? You validate that by seeing an increase in customer lifetime value and a decent enough CSAT score. Yeah. So then what was the next step beyond that then?
The next step was, okay, so we know that this works. The question is, does this work at scale? Because obviously, you know, even though you have, and here's a counterpoint as well, because usually it's basically said that, okay, it's human conversations are better because humans tend to be more empathetic. But I'll talk about this. But so the next step for us was, we've done this for a given set of people. Let's try and see if we can scale it up, which is where we went down the AI chatbot route. So that was when we kind of almost brought it in as a hybrid. We said, okay, why don't we do an AI chatbot start of the conversation with a human handoff and a human in the loop? And obviously, the idea was to kind of have as much containment within the chat. And again, lo and behold, we kind of saw that actually our CSATs went up. Our lifetime value obviously kind of went up because now we were able to kind of also address. So previously we used to do it during the office hours. Now it's a 24/7. So you're kind of addressing a different set of segment of users as well. So this is the counterintuitive point. We were actually able to see that the bot at times is more empathetic than the human agent as well, because humans are humans. I mean, you can be empathetic, you can be sympathetic for the first 10 times, 15 times, 20 times. The 21st, 23rd, 30th, 50th, you are bound to get drained out. That doesn't happen with the bot. So the bot is consistently kind of there with the right kind of responses and the right kind of support. And when we did this, this is again going back in 2022, obviously we were not using LLMs. We were using the traditional KNN NLP models, but even then we kind of saw a fairly higher CSAT. So the second stage of experiment was that does this work at scale? And again, obviously we had the same LTV, we had the same metric as LTV and CSAT. And we saw that in some cases, we actually went higher than the human, or at least were at par. So that was the proof that, okay, conversation and an automated conversation with an AI assistant works towards job search needs as well. It was the same set of topics, the same conversations, LTV improved, CSAT improved. So that was the second stage of the experimentation that we did.
Mm. And then what was, you mentioned that the AI assisted part was the beginning of the conversation and then it handed over to a human. So what elements of the conversation was the bot handling, and then when did it hand over to the human?
On most occasions, we actually had the bot handle most of it. We had the human in the loop purely as a fallback because, I mean, this is going back, now it seems like a distant story, but Kane, you'll remember, bot used to be plagued with, sorry, I did not understand what you said, because you did not end up training the bot on a given intent. So we had the human in the loop as purely as a fallback. But we very rarely had to kind of fall back on a human. Most of the entire conversation of, you know, someone kind of coming, sharing their needs, and basically the assistant kind of finding the job, helping them out with any additional information, that was entirely handled by the AI assistant. The human in the loop was purely as a fallback.
Right. Okay. Fair enough then. So the second validation point is, can we do this at scale?
Yeah.
In which case you proven that you can do with a more traditional intent-based bot. What was the next step then? And
the next
why?
Step was, the next step is where we kind of went down the route of, we were talking about the LLMs. We actually kind of started talking in terms of LLMs way before ChatGPT happened, because GPT-3 had existed for a while. And one of the biggest advantages is, because it's a large model, you don't have to kind of put in that much effort in terms of training of the intent. So you and I have kind of suffered through this in terms of, you know, you have to, if you want the bot to do something specific, you have to train it upon that particular intent, and then you have to keep training it up. And that was a fair amount of heavy load. So that's where we kind of went down the route of experimenting with LLMs. Initially, it was GPT-3, then 3.5. And then obviously, you know, ChatGPT happened and the world changed. And then obviously, there was a fair amount of excitement, buy-in as well. And so the last year, what we've actually done is, as I kind of mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, we've been traditionally working with the intent models, but we've now kind of worked where we've almost, there are some bits where even the traditional journeys, we've almost plucked out the KNN models and we've kind of put in our own trained LLM models. Initially, we were kind of doing it purely, you know, we're now at a point where we are trying to kind of do some fine tuning of the models as well. But the first foray was obviously, you know, take it kind of off the shelf and then purely through prompt engineering and, you know, dynamic examples and static examples and all those elements. The second foray was, can we make this a better quality conversation? Because LLMs, as we know it, are by definition, you can now really bring in that element of empathy. And you can really bring in that element of that camaraderie and that the softer aspects as well. That was not possible with the intent model. So the prompt for the third stage of the experiment, so to speak, was we did not see, whilst we were kind of getting a good CSAT, because the job was getting done and we were kind of getting a good LTV as well, that element of emotion was still almost artificially feigned. So you had to kind of almost hard code the emotion, which is not the right way to do it. And that's where the drive towards LLM, it was timely. I think we would have still kind of gone ahead with GPT-3 and continued to work with it. But ChatGPT happened. And then since then, I think the models have improved drastically. I mean, GPT-4 is way, way ahead of what we saw in GPT-3 in terms of emotions, et cetera, et cetera. So that's where we kind of got into the LLM world. And now we actually have a pilot where over WhatsApp, we have a certain set of users who get to chat with the LLM powered productionized bot. And it's obviously, it's very different. I mean, for people who've been involved in productionizing LLMs, it's ChatGPT is good because you don't have any obligations as an enterprise over there. But when you're talking about productionizing an LLM, there is so much that you have to think about from the point of view of hallucination, from bias, from toxicity, from latency and other aspects as well. So it's been a journey, but yeah, that's been the third stage in terms of productionizing and powering that same conversation through LLMs.
Mm. And so the goal of that was to the hypothesis there being that can we improve CSAT here? Is that what it is?
In this case, actually, it's both. The needle, again, in this case, the same two needles of LTV and lifetime value and CSAT, we actually saw again a significant jump in both. Because a better conversation leads to better data, which leads to better applications and more applications. So people now kind of were more getting more engaged. So we actually saw the lifetime value improve. And we obviously saw the CSAT. And it's like, we've never seen these kind of CSAT numbers. These are phenomenally high. I mean, even when we set our first, we're talking very close to, you know, what a very well-trained human would kind of get to in terms of CSAT. So we're talking very high numbers, but yes, the driver for, to circle back to your question again, the driver for the LLM was to improve the conversation and truly get into that, as we put it internally, we want to kind of move away from it being a bot to an assistant. Yeah. So with the traditional intent, it's still bot. It's there, it's functional, it does the job, it does it more efficiently. But because you want to bring in that element of emotion, you want to kind of almost build a habit, you want to build an equation, a relationship with the user, that's where we went into the world of LLMs, where there's empathy, where there's emotion, where there's camaraderie, there's counseling, there's support. That was essentially the driver.
Mm. And so is the use case still the same? Yeah. As in the conversation still the same, yeah?
The conversation is still the same, but we've kind of, again, as I said, the goal for us is a job search companion. Or we're kind of now kind of getting to the point where it's a career thing. It's not a one point in terms of you speak with it when it is, when it's you're looking for a job. You could, And that's why I'm saying you want to kind of build in that assistant persona, because you want it to be the go-to person. If you've had a tough day in the office, you want it to be the go-to person to kind of go and vent out. And basically say, I've had this, because that's when you're probably most looking for a job. So the primary use case is still helping someone find the job, but it's not just be the transaction of I found this right job for you. It's the entire experience around it.
Right. That makes sense. And so where did you start with LLMs then? You've got this intent-based bot, for want of a better phrase. You want to try and make it more natural and free-flowing and empathetic and, you know, all that kind of stuff. What was the first thing you tried?
So I think we've tried a number of ways, and in some cases it's kind of become, I don't want to say full circle, but it's been a half circle. So to answer your question, we actually started with LLM first and LLM only. So traditionally, if you see, most of the other vendors went down the route of, we have these intents trained, and we will have the LLM as a fallback. So if you remember, I think this goes back last year when we were in Edinburgh, we were talking about this. Most of the, because that's the easiest way to kind of bring in an LLM in, saying, let's not disrupt the traditional intent-based models that we have. We'll basically have an LLM as a fallback for the intents that it's not been trained on. Because our intention was to kind of be heavily driven by the emotion and the experience, we went down the different route. So we actually had LLM first, and for a while LLM only. So we brought in initially we started out with 3.5, but very quickly we kind of brought in 4 as well. So we had the entire conversation as a monolith. So it was a one single prompt, as a monolith, as one single agent. We started off with, let's try and see if I bring in a GPT-4, does this kind of move the needles? And at that point of time, it kind of, again, as I said, the results were very positive. And so we kind of saw an improvement in the LTV, we saw an improvement in the CSAT. And from there on, then the focus kind of came in terms of, and maybe worth mentioning this point, because people who are looking to implement LLMs, they would have probably faced this. Latency continues to be a bit of a problem when it comes down to using the large language models. And that's why we kind of chose WhatsApp, because WhatsApp still is an asynchronous thing. You're not typing and then waiting for the user. You can type and then go away and then come back for the response. So we started off with a single monolith prompt for GPT-4. It looked fine. The numbers looked good. And then the next focus for us came in terms of, okay, how do we expand this? How do we scale up? How do I bring in more features into this? And how do I kind of reduce my cost as well? Because cost, again, going back a year, although now kind of prices are dropping, but going back a year, LLMs and probably are still more expensive than the traditional KNN models. So that's where we kind of did a number of forays into. We went down the route of the multi-agent approach, where we basically said, instead of having one single monolith, let's basically have these different agents which basically specialize in different tasks. And we'll kind of then, we are at that point of time trying to break in. We are trying to basically then only call in and therefore incur the prompt costs for that specific task as well. So we had, we've experimented with different designs. We've experimented with designs where we can basically dynamically create a prompt. We've experimented with designs where we have LLM only in multi-agent. We also have, we've experimented with ideas where, because not always do you really need an LLM. There are some parts where you actually need it to be very deterministic. For instance, if it is responding from a GDPR perspective or any of those things, you don't want it to give a vague response. So there are some use cases where you want one of your agents to be driven by traditional models as well. You want, in some cases, your responses to be rules driven as well. So that's where we are. Where we are is, to answer your question, we started off with a simple LLM monolith being trained by the prompts. So basically prompt engineering, you're giving it a series of instructions in your prompts. We then evolved into kind of giving it examples in terms of static examples and dynamic examples in terms of, this is what a good conversation looks like, to the point where we then kind of went down the route of Actually, interesting you mentioned about the federated. I don't think it means the same thing for us, but we kind of went down the route of federated and unfederated or a centralized model as well, where you have a one primary agent and then you have it is basically orchestrating it for the other agents, whereas as opposed to a federated one where each agent is almost equally empowered and it basically then talks to the others. So we've long story short, we started off with single. Then we kind of gradually kind of went down the dynamics prompts, static prompts, trying to make it better in terms of putting the guardrails around hallucination bias. Then kind of went down the multi-agent route, and we're still experimenting with a few different ideas as well. So it's been a journey, but it starts off with the North Stars, and then trying to once you know that it can move the North Stars, then you're trying to optimize the what's under the bonnet in terms of the use of the LLMs.
And so that first use case where you started from, then that was you mentioned it was like one monolithic kind of prompt, basically. So what were you doing there? Were you essentially kind of taking the utterance from the user and sending that to the model with the context of the expected conversation and having the model produce a response and then saving that and then having the next response from the user and then sending the rest of the conversation to the model and with the further
You're right, because out of the box, the context is not there. So we had to kind of we you know obviously LangChain kind of provides its some benefits to it as well. But you're right, initially it we had to kind of almost artificially or just put in the additional effort in terms of retaining the context. We're still experimenting with a few more ideas around it, but it's exactly that we were kind of getting the intent from the user or the utterance from the user. The model kind of obviously has its instructions, very similar to ChatGPT, has its instructions saying if this is what the user is looking for, then you're here to provide this assistance. This is what you're supposed to do. And then you kind of obviously have your necessary guardrails in terms of this you should not do this, you cannot do that. But primarily, it was initially starting off with just pure lot of instructions in the prompt itself. And then basically based on the inputs, calling the necessary backend tools or the backend APIs to get the information and then feed it back. So it was very simplistic in terms of, you get your inputs, you get your user request. You parse it, you understand it, you have given it instructions, it knows this API to call in this scenario, basically pulls in that information and then packages it well and then passes it back. That was the very first experiment that we did.
And what are the limitations of that way of doing things?
Again, it's because it's the problem is the moment you have a huge prompt, it's again there it is this is by definition the main problem with LLMs. It is not deterministic. At times, it will choose to ignore some instructions. At times, it will follow the instructions. At times, it will choose to move away from those instructions. So, the larger prompt that you have, the less consistency that we were getting. And obviously, the larger prompt you have is every time you're having to send that prompt back, there's a lot of cost as well. So it's a good idea to start off with a single prompt because you want to test the waters in terms of this thing. But once you know your use case, it kind of makes sense to have it chunked out and broken out so that because this is true for humans as well, right? I tell you basically 100 instructions, you will not remember all of them. I give you 10 instructions, you will probably be able to kind of follow those diligently. The same thing happens over here as well. So the problem with the large prompt was it was you lose out on your consistency, which is still a problem, but definitely a bigger problem with the large prompt. And then obviously the cost is definitely way higher.
And so you then move towards more of a multi-agent approach where presumably you've got the first port of call is that you have some prompt which will be like, this is the context of the conversation, these are the kind of topic areas we can have conversations about. Based on the user giving us this query, which one of these topic areas does it match, if any at all? And then off the back of that, you'll say, right, okay, if it's this topic, we go to this agent. If it's this topic, we go to that one.
So that's where you have the primary and the centralized model, where you basically have the primary agent, which kind of has almost the business logic, and then you have specific agents which can then perform specific tasks. This is traditionally how it's being done in the industry as well. So that's where we are. And then now what happens is because now since you know the each of them has a specific task, it's a more concise set of instructions. The prompt is more concise, which helps with basically the consistency problem, helps with the cost, helps with the training as well. And essentially, if you want to basically add some new feature or add a new aspect to the conversation, it's an additional agent. So it kind of gives you that scalability as well, makes it more popular.
Yeah. And what were some of the challenges that you had to kind of overcome to get that way of working up and running?
I think again, so this has been a fairly, we're still in the process of optimizing it. We're seeing some benefits in terms of obviously cost and consistency, but now what happens is there's a hand of delay. So it adds to the latency because previously everything was with one. Now you're basically, this kind of gets the information, then it passes on to another agent who basically kind of then parses it, then gives it back to you, and so on and so forth. So if you're talking about aspects of latency, et cetera, that kind of, it adds to the latency part of the problem.
Right.
From a cost perspective, I think it's definitely better. And even from a CSAT perspective, we're still doing the experiments, but I think in terms of the journey experience, it's again similar. So our naturalness hasn't suffered. So we kind of benchmark our naturalness as well, naturalness, empathy, et cetera. Those things have not suffered, but it takes some effort to kind of take a single prompt and chunk it out in terms of different agents and make sure that the experience does not go down. So the additional work that you have to do is in terms of the testing. So there's a lot more testing, and testing LLMs itself is another issue, because traditional software, you test it, and if you click the button and the button does what it's supposed to do, the test passes. But in the case of an LLM, it might pass 10 times, the 11th time it might not pass. The 12th time, if it passes, doesn't mean that the 13th time it will not fail. So it takes a different approach towards testing LLMs as well. But again, I digress. But the point is, with the multiple agent model, one of your trade-offs comes down in terms of latency.
Right. That makes sense. So the first way of working is that it's very expensive. And prone to hallucinations because you've got one big long prompt and also the entire conversation that needs to be managed. And so the further the conversation goes, the bigger the prompt gets as well, and therefore the hallucination problem.
There are two parts, because you talk about hallucination. One is hallucination in the sense that it's making stuff up. We did not have that as a problem, because that's the biggest risk for us is the model coming back and hallucinating, making up a job, or basically talking about certain aspects of a job. So for instance, if user says, hey, does this job allow working from home? Because that's what the model does. I mean, you give it the requirements and it basically presents the results back. And then you can have a conversation saying, hey, does this allow working from home? What are the other perks, et cetera, et cetera. So just the way you would have a conversation with a human recruiter. And at that point, the model is hallucinating. That's a big risk for us, because you are then making stuff up on behalf of the enterprise. So we were very, very stringent about it. In fact, we could have released a lot earlier, but we kind of put in a lot of effort towards making sure that our hallucinations are, in some use cases, they're zero. In some specific use cases, it's like near zero. So the model might still come back and hallucinate, saying, in some cases, the users say, hey, I'm busy now. Can you basically reach out to me in, 2 hours time? And the model, and on occasions, does kind of come back and say, yeah, I'm going to do that. Currently, it doesn't have that capability, but it has a tendency to please the user. So that's where the hallucination came in. The problem with the long prompt was, at times, it did not follow the instructions. So it basically, if you said, hey, if the user does this, then you're supposed to respond back with this. Sometimes it would, sometimes it doesn't.
Right.
With LLMs, I keep joking, there's almost like a ghost in the machine problem over there, because at times it has a mind of its own. So I'll give you one example. And this was very nice. It's very endearing as well, because it shows customer obsession. So we had a user come back and say, So we kind of prompted the user saying, hey, are you looking for a job? I found this job for you. Does this make sense? And the user came back and said, no, actually, thank you for this, but you know, I've already recently found a job. And the model on its own came back and said, oh, fantastic. In this case, I'm going to basically, you know, unsubscribe you from the service because you don't need these job alerts. We had not instructed it, but it's the it logically thinks it. So it understands customer obsession. It doesn't understand business so much, but it basically has a mind of its own. So those are the problems. So to kind of circle back, it's basically the long prompt was the consistency of following the instructions. Hallucination, anyways, was basically something that we've been focused heavily on hallucination. We've been focused heavily on bias. We have 0% bias. We have 0% toxicity. We've been kind of working, obviously, from a GDPR perspective in terms of all aspects of GDPR. We brought in the element of, you know, anyone who's basically underage, we detect that, and we would basically, based on the queries, and then we would basically not provide the service. So purely from, and that's the difference between ChatGPT experience versus basically productionizing an LLM. You are talking about other aspects of latency cost, but you're also talking about all these compliance aspects as well. So that's basically the journey to make.
Interesting. So on it'd be interesting to get into all of those, but on the hallucination issue in particular, how did you go about tackling hallucinations? It sounds as though the use case is more around facilitating a dialogue, question answer, almost like a data capture, and then you have some work to do to take that data and match that to a job record that you then will pull back, and then the model or the assistant and the context of the assistant then has that job, and therefore you presumably pull that job into its kind of short-term memory so that a user can ask a question about it, like, does it have, you work from home, that kind of stuff. So are you using like the typical retrieval augmented generation for this, or no, do you have something else going on that allows you to mitigate hallucinations?
There's again, because we are still in that point where we are experimenting with multiple ideas, but one of the experiments uses RAG as well to kind of retrieve information. But ultimately, it's basically because we're not talking about large amount of data, but exactly the use case is exactly that. You give me your requirements, I present some response back to you. You basically say, this is good, this is not good. We have a further conversation in terms of a more salary or a more senior role, different location, different company, different aspects of it. So basically the entire conversation of getting more data, understanding the user need, and then we kind of present back a result saying, I found that this seems like a good match. And then the user goes on to have a conversation with us about that job in terms of, you know, what does this provide, any questions, et cetera, and once the user is better informed, the user then feels more confident to apply. Towards answering those questions, we do basically, like probably anyone else in the industry, we do have a RAG approach as well, but we are kind of experimenting with other aspects as well, in terms of pure semantic searches, et cetera, towards getting that information. But that's essentially the hallucination problem is more in terms of answering the questions, because first things first is so if you talk about in our particular use case, there's an initial big risk of the model making up a job where it did not find. So if I basically say I'm looking for a museum curator job in Manchester with a salary of £3 million pounds, any other model might basically, if it has the ability to, is allowed to hallucinate, might make up a job. We cannot allow for that. So the first thing to take care of is basically hallucination at that high level. The second hallucination trap is basically where it answers a question about a job by making stuff up. And we basically have 2-3 layers. So we initially, you know, whenever we kind of talk about releasing a few feature, we have a set of our colleagues who are purely focused on, from a conversations perspective, conversation ops team, who basically do an analysis, and they will basically do multiple runs to see and detect any kind of hallucination. Then we actually have a separate model which continues to scour any of the transcripts to detect any hallucination. So we have a 2-3 layers to kind of look for any kind of hallucination. But obviously the first thing is preventive. So we have our guardrails in our tools and in our prompt to prevent these kind of hallucinations. So first is making up a job. Second is basically making stuff up about a job. And the third is basically where the bot tends to overextend its capabilities in terms of, yes, I can call you back. Or I can find a job based on the color of the logo or something like that. I'm making it up. Those are the area that we are kind of now talking about in terms of tackling the hallucination. But these two, we've been very diligent about it in terms of keeping those to kind of zero or near very, you know, few decimal places in terms of the percentage of hallucinations.
That's brilliant. It's great to know that you know those kind of numbers are feasible, basically. And also, are you doing that via kind of a chain of prompts? So basically a user will say something, and then your first prompt is, does it match one of these topics? And then if it does, it goes to a secondary prompt, which is, does this have the potential to be toxic? And if that's not the case, it'll move on. Like, do you have a prompt chain approach, or are you doing something different?
No, we do kind of use the in this case, there are multiple agents that are coming in. We obviously have the chain of thought kind of in terms of, you know, this is the thing, this is my reasoning, this is why I'm going to do this, etc. So from an auditability perspective. But by and large, in terms of preventing the hallucination without kind of going into the details, there's a fair amount of work that we've kind of done at a prompt engineering level. And also in terms of, as I said, in terms of the dynamic static examples and other things to make sure that it knows which bits it basically cannot make stuff up. So you have to kind of give it the set of instructions, because toxicity is slightly different. Toxicity, we have a separate API around it, which is basically to kind of check for content moderation in terms of, is this topic toxic or not, et cetera, et cetera. And you're checking for that, and you're reacting to it in real life. But in terms of hallucination, so let me talk about hallucination first. In terms of hallucination, it is by and large, you have multiple checks and places which can, without going into the details, to prevent it from happening. And then we basically have these daily audits as well to check if there is any kind of leakage happening, because drifts tend to happen. So you have an initial, a secondary model which checks for hallucinations. And then you basically have the final human audit as well to kind of check if there are any aspects that then need to kind of be looped back in terms of the original prompt around it. So that's hallucination. The same thing happens for toxicity as well. But for toxicity and bias, we have a different set of models.
Right. But the process is the same. And are you doing those things at the user input stage or at the response generation stage?
In terms of it's both. So for instance, things like bias, there's obviously a check for if there's a response, is it a bias, or things like, you know, response, etc. Is the user basically said something which has an element of bias built in which case you're reacting to it differently. You're checking whether you're making sure that your response is not biased. So if someone basically comes back and says, I want to work for a company which only has, Asians there is a bias built in that response. And at that point of time, when we are responding back, we have to make sure that our response does not reinforce that bias. At which point of time the model would come back and say, I'm not able to kind of do search based on that. However, you know, there are equal opportunities, blah, blah, blah. And then based on your criteria, this is what we are doing. So we would sidestep that bias. Same goes for toxicity. Again, there is an element of the user being abusive. And then we have to make sure that our responses are not toxic, but equally we have this where, you know, if the user is basically being abusive and toxic for, you know, three occasions, then, you know, it's a three-strike policy. We would unsubscribe the user around it. So it's basically you're kind of looking at the intent, the response from the user. You are then reacting and responding to it and then making sure that your response obviously also does not reflect that bias.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't know if that answered the question.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a similar approach to what I've seen elsewhere. I was just checking that it was along the same lines. The two final things to mention. I definitely want to get into a little bit on testing, because I think that's an important discussion. But you were talking there, what was it? Oh, God, my mind's gone blank again now. We were talking about managing hallucinations. We were talking about toxicity. We were talking about bias. There was another question that I had. Now it's skipped my mind. Maybe it'll come back. Let's go on to testing first then. So with testing, obviously with those traditional intent-based models, you've got defined pathways and defined flows that you can traverse, and there's automated testing tools like, you know, Bespoken and others, and Sierra and whatnot, that will essentially be able to test those flows at scale and all that kind of stuff and make sure the correct intents are being triggered at certain times, because it's a lot more, you know, an intent-based model will give you a number back, basically, yeah. And that's what you can use to determine whether or not a test is passed or failed. Whereas these models are all based on language, unless you ask it to give you a number in return. And most of the time, we're not really caring about numbers. We're caring about, does the response that comes back contextually match the question, and does it contain the right data from APIs? And so what has your approach been to testing?
To be honest, again, this remains an open question for us. We still trying to kind of get the right way of doing it, but by and large, we've kind of had to build a similar test rig where we are kind of running automated conversations and then looking for those test cases to pass or fail. So it's a similar thing where instead of basically, you know, kind of testing for, you know, I click this button and I got this, you're basically saying these are the inputs that I'm providing in terms of utterances and what is the model coming back with. We don't know. Honest answer is, Kane, I don't know what's the right way of doing it. We've been checking for it. One aspect is basically you almost have, we've been, you know, playing around with this idea of almost having a pseudo user LLM to kind of almost talk to the agent LLM, have those conversations, and then do this. Short answer is I don't think, and I don't know whether in at an industry level there has been a defined policy of or a defined approach of basically having testing LLMs, because the problem with LLMs is it'll work as per your needs 99 times, and the 100th time, because it's not deterministic, there's an element where it will deviate. So you're not just, it's not binary, it's basically you're not looking for a specific input, you're looking for was the input in the right region or not. So this is, we're still kind of working out with it. We have built a number of test rigs where we basically run a number of tests around it. There's a bigger problem of you might fix one part of the problem, but we don't know how it impacts the other part of the prompt. So that was another problem that we had with the single prompt, that you find something, you fix this part of the prompt, but you don't know whether you've actually, you know, there's regression, you cause regression in the some other part of the prompt. Mm-hmm. So multi-agent from that perspective helps. So we're still trying to figure it out. I don't have the answer to the question in terms of what's the best way to test it. We are experimenting with automated rigs. We are experimenting with agents for testing, et cetera, et cetera. But maybe speak to me in, say, 6 months' time. I don't know. By then, someone in the industry might have a solution, or there might be a solution out there that we are not aware of. And someone maybe basically reaches out and says, hey, why don't you do it this
way? I know that there are, I think it might be Wisdom that does this, which is basically you take the transcript of a conversation. So everything that you're doing at the moment to generate transcripts and to generate conversations and stuff like that, you then give a model a transcript and say, what is the outcome of this conversation? Or you give it a prompt which is specific to the thing you're trying to test. Human First do this as well at a more sort of like, not necessarily in a bot context, more in a kind of live conversation context, but still the same sort of premise, which is that you pass a transcript to a model, and you would say, this is a conversation about X, Y, Z. We are looking to see whether or not the user got the outcome that they were searching for. Did it or did it not? And a separate prompt might be, here's the transcript to this conversation. We're looking to see whether there's anything in this conversation that might have caused an adverse reaction for a user. Or we're looking for anything in here that might stick out to be something that might not be truthful. Or you get the gist, like whatever the criteria is that you're trying to test for, you have a separate prompt for each criteria, and you use a model and the transcript to then see whether or not you can get into.
Yeah. It's similar to the approach for the automated test rig that we're talking about. We're kind of taking a similar approach, but the problem is the limitation over there is the transcripts that you're feeding in. There's no guarantee that the thousandth and tenth time,
yeah,
model will spew out that transcript or that similar transcript. It has a tendency to deviate.
Yeah.
This is the thing with the humans as well, right? The human agents over there, you can train them. 99 times they'll say the right thing. 100th time, they might deviate. They make mistakes. They might basically say something in terms of no refund is not possible or something like that or whatever it is. In which case, that's where the quality kind of control comes in. So it's exactly that. So you can review the transcripts, but because by definition, it's not deterministic, the transcripts that have passed through the test have passed, but that is no guarantee that on occasions it might not deviate. Yeah. That's the problem.
Yeah. And will that ever be fixed? Or does that seem to be as long as these models are never deterministic, is that just a risk that you kind of have to live with? Or do you think that that will be fixed at some point?
I think it's basically, again, the answer probably lies in the narrower use cases and the narrower agents, because again, as I said, if I have few tasks to do, then I'm less likely to fail on those. So I think the answer, and this is true for not just LLMs, for all LLMs, it's never 100%. It's always a probability. So there, you'll never get to it. But I think with time, the margin of error is going to keep decreasing because we'll find different techniques. We'll test more higher volumes. We'll basically put more guardrails. We'll probably have automated, agents talking to agents, generate instead of basically just testing, say, X number of transcripts, you basically do 10X or 100X of those transcripts because now you can automatically run these tests and get a better value around it. So I think the problem is always going to be there, but the size of the problem is going to keep decreasing.
Mm, yeah, that makes sense. The one final question, which is a question that I forgot about earlier on, was... I've been debating doing some sort of crowdsourcing work on this. I just haven't had time really. But all of the requirements around productionizing LLMs, which is that, you don't want it to be toxic. You don't want it to be biased. You don't want it to hallucinate. You don't want it, all of these kind of things that we need to do to make sure that responses are managed properly. It seems to me as though everyone's doing that same work. Surely there is some standardization that can happen around these kind of prompts so that next time, maybe, if you've got another use case or another company wants to do something, rather than them trying to create their own prompt around this stuff, surely that could just be standardized.
Yeah, it could be. It'll have to be very model specific because a prompt that works for 4 might not work for 4 Turbo or T or Claude or something like that. But you're right, and this is the reason. This is the route that when I talked about the modular part of it, it's exactly that. In terms of, I don't need to have the same prompt for GDPR and bias and toxicity in every agent. I could basically have that as contained as one agent, one standard approach in terms of this is the best prompt for GPT-4, which kind of gives you the desired result. And anytime you're doing this, you just bring that agent in. But so the point is over here is it'll depend on the model. It'll have to be model specific. But absolutely, the idea is as you scale up, because we're not in the business of building one journey. Ultimately, if we are kind of from a stepstone perspective, there are multiple use cases where we can benefit from a conversation with the user. And the idea is that you have almost these pre-built components or pre-built agents, which then can be brought into any journey as required.
Nice. That sounds brilliant. Well, Som, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for tuning in and for joining me. It's been absolutely wicked. I think we got into a lot of stuff in there around, yes, the value of the use case, which seems to be proven out certainly in your situation. I think that I enjoy the journey and the kind of like hypothesis-based approach that you've got, which is let's not just do this for shits and giggles. Let's do this to see whether or not we can actually make a difference at each stage, and every stage that advances, you're doing it for a specific reason, which is not AI for AI sake, which is starting to piss me off a little bit, but it's doing it because you've got a very specific question you're trying to answer, and you're taking a very methodical approach to proving that it's going to add value to the business and the customer. So I love the story. It's brilliant.
No, thank you. And I've always loved our discussion, so it's been great talking to you, and thank you for having me. But I do want to kind of reiterate the point that you mentioned. Not everything has to be AI, not everything has to be LLM. So it could be LLM first, but it is not LLM only. It could be AI first, but it should not be AI only, because AI is not the answer to every question. Many times rules work out better and cheaper and easier to maintain. So there has to be some kind of a thought process going into it.
Definitely, definitely. It's about creating the experience and putting together the tools and the technologies to make the experience as best as it can possibly be, rather than tech for tech's sake, isn't it?
The loyalty is to the customer, the loyalty is to the North Stars. If a rule does the job better, why wouldn't we do it? It's a lot simpler.
Yeah.
So why not?
Perfect. Brilliant space to end on. Fantastic. Thank you again, Sam. It's really, really great to speak to you again. Thank you all for tuning in. Absolute pleasure to have you. Don't forget, Unpass tickets, early birds are still on unpassconf.com. And if you do want to check out that webinar with Zoom that we're running this week, then you can go to vux.world/events. And yeah, we'll see you on the next one. Thank you so much. Bye now.